All right, so to start our talk, you now experience Poll Everywhere, interactive way to get some opinion, student opinion, in a classroom, especially a huge classroom. And now I can tell you it was all just one big trick because we don't really care what you voted for. We're going to talk about all of it. Sorry. That's how we roll. So we'll go ahead and start our talk. And because I expect at this point in your lives, if you're here at South by Southwest, you are literate, so you can read. So I won't read the title of our talk to you. I know it's in bad taste. I'm John. This is Katie.
Hello.
We're from the Department of Geography at Virginia Tech, and we're going to talk about some stuff. Now, you see the class or the title. Oh, yeah. I teach a class called World Regions. Katie is the technical assistant that makes it all come to life and be able to do it to thousands of people at one time. And so the kind of byline is the class is World Regions, and this experience is bringing the world into World Regions and World Regions into the world. And you're going to see what that means as we talk about some of the experiences we've had as we've supersized the classroom up to bigger and bigger numbers. Now, sorry if I'm a little nervous talking in front of a crowd this big because I'm used to talking to a crowd that big. So actually, I get more offset if there's less than several thousand people in the room with me. So I apologize for any stuttering or tripping up that I do. And this is a live class, and that's why we show the picture, not just to impress you, but to get you to understand that this is a live thing. This is not an online class. We are experimenting with how far can you push it and still have a true engaging environment? And that is really the key here. That in the past, we would never 10 years ago have thought about doing this because the technologies weren't there. To simply put a bunch of content online and say, hey, 10,000 people looked at my stuff. It's like, well, that's nice. You know, a billion people looked at, you know, somebody's web page yesterday. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean any learning has occurred. There's no way to assess it. And more important than that, is it meaningful to people? And so 10 years ago, we couldn't have done this, but the technologies have now gotten into place. We're like, hey, we think we can keep bumping the class size and still making a meaningful experience that people are learning and getting something out of it. It's a two-way street. I want to stress the whole time that all the stuff we're talking about is to increase interaction between the professor and the students. And we think that so far it's worked. Now, when you start thinking about teaching a class of 3,000 people live, a lot of folks would have a instinct to overstructure it and be like, oh my gosh, 3,000 students. You know, they're students, they're slackers, and they're just going to be looking at Facebook in the class. So we should make it as strict as possible, make it like boot camp. Yes, get in here. Here are the rules. Follow the rules. Get graded. Sit down. All right. And what we found is that if you try, and those of you that are educators, I'm assuming most of you are educators in the room right now, even in a class of 10 or 20, there's somebody's always got an excuse for everything, isn't there? Somebody's grandmother's going to die on exam day no matter what. And so if you try to start thinking about scaling this up to 3,000 people, you have the potential of several thousand grandmothers dying on a day, and you can't be held responsible for that. And it's too impossible to think about rescheduling when people have excuses, and there are legitimate excuses. So instead of the rigidness, we've said, you know what, let's do the opposite approach. Let's blow it up from the inside out. Let's make maximum flexibility in assignments. A maximum flexibility in communications. And again, that's the key to keep it engaging so that people are there in it to win it. And also increased interaction among all players. And this is kind of the new, cool, novel stuff that the social networking is bringing to the table. It's not just that I'm talking to 3,000 people, and it's not just that 3,000 people can talk back to me. That's awesome. But we're now pushing the boundaries of, let's have those 3,000 people talk to the 3,000 people. Let's have student-to-student interaction as much as possible. Let's have student-to-real-world interaction. Let's have real-world-to-student interaction. And all that stuff's awesome because it takes me out of the equation. I was like, yeah, you guys go can learn and do all this stuff. You've heard about the flipped classroom. That's kind of the new hip term right now. I don't know if that's what this is, but I'm just trying to get everybody engaged and learning from each other, learning from me, learning from sources outside and inside the classroom. Thus, we do all this stuff. It's very learner-centered to allow students to engage the information in the ways that's best for them. And again, that's kind of common sense in today's world. It's like, yes, provide a million different ways for people to learn, and one of them will stick. All right? Even the most problematic student, if you provide enough opportunities, will find something that they're like, that's cool. That's the way I learn. I dig that. On top of that, students are treated as individuals and are forced basically to take ownership. And this is just a side note, but I think we've probably done perhaps a little bit too much coddling in America, in general in America, of here, come into the classroom, here's the rules, follow the rules, turn stuff in, you'll be fine. Just try to stay as asleep as possible, go get your degree, get a job, stay asleep, you're fine, buy stuff. So I think that's perhaps gone too far, especially in the classroom, and so we're saying, hey, this is actually going to be a little tough. We're going to provide you as many tools as we can, and we're working our ass off on this side of the podium. It's up to you to choose your fate and bust your ass to get your grade that you want. It's really kind of – you have to do this forced ownership. And in doing these things, yes, some people still get left behind. Some people are detached. Some people aren't going to be connected with no matter what. And you just have to accept that, especially in a group of 3,000. But we found that when you do this stuff and you bring, you know, life to it and provide these opportunities, that a real group synergy has formed organically. And by organically, I mean it's not something we consciously thought about. Hey, let's get students really excited about this class. It's no. If you just keep doing kind of interesting things and pushing the borders and forcing people to do their work and interact with each other, magical things start to happen, especially in a class of 3,000. Again, maybe you would not have that synergy in a class of only 30, because if there's only a few motivated players in a class of 30, well, those are the kids that answer every question that all the other students hate because they blow the curve. But when you have a class of 3,000, the percentage is up. Just think about percentage-wise, we have hundreds of people who are super motivated. And that's actually a critical mass that super motivated group can affect other people in very positive ways very quickly. And so you can drown out the negativity or the lackadaisical ones fairly quickly with 100 or 200 or 500 people that are fired up about some. Now about our course, and I'm going to go through this very quickly. It is called World Regions. It's in the geography department. Pretty much every geography department across the country teaches a very intro-level class called World Regions. I call it AKA Intro to the World. It's a live lecture on Monday nights for a couple hours. Optional films, international films we use as educational tools on Tuesday and Wednesday nights. And the kind of content of the course, I call it AKA Intro to the World because Americans are... And sorry for all the Americans in the room, which I'm assuming is most of us. Americans, by and large, are woefully inept about what's going on planet Earth. Woefully, internationally clueless. In an age where we are expecting all of our students to be globalized citizens and be working out in the world and traveling out in the world, which we fully expect all of them to do, but we never teach them crap about the world, really. At any given point in the educational system, we don't really sit down and say, hey, let's talk about the Israeli-Palestinian situation. Whoa, hey, that's too touchy. We'll push that off to college. And in college, oh, we'll push that off to some other, to CNN. And no one really gets around to saying, hey, you got to know the critical issues of what's going on in the world. You got to know what's happening in North Korea, the tensions there. You have to understand the value of Chinese money and how it's affecting jobs. You need to understand that this guy just got reelected in Russia, and that has real impacts for U.S. foreign policy, your tax dollars at work. I just am passionate about people understanding and getting what's going on in the world, not the least of which it affects them in their future career, in their future life, enriching them and giving them opportunities to understand and engage with the real world. But actually, it's almost a moral obligation, I feel, that as citizens of the superpower that is the United States, that U.S. policy affects the whole planet. And damn it, we put these jokers in power that are making these policies that are affecting the world. It's our moral obligation to know what's going on in the world and what our government is doing. So... sorry, now I'm all worked up and I'm getting ready to have somebody yell amen. But that's what the content of the course is, okay? Just to get you the context of what we're talking about for the rest of this stuff. Now, from a physical standpoint, it is an old school hall. Virginia Tech's been around for a couple hundred years. This building's like 100 years old. And so it has this great little mini coliseum that used to sponsor rock stars and stuff like that. And it still does. It's where the major shows are and venues. But we've converted it into a classroom. I just kind of assumed that, oh, all college campuses have a really big classroom or a really big amphitheater, but that's actually not the case. So we're kind of special and that we have this space that doesn't exist in a lot of places. In fact, this building's so old, I tell people over on this side of the country and further west that I teach in a building that was built before your state was a state. So there are constraints of the room itself, because the ventilation system is also pre-World War I. So there are constraints of temperature, and the sound is not great, but we make do. And we have a couple major big screens going on like this. Actually, our screens are about as big as this whole room behind us. And it's kind of a weird thing if you think about it, to have 3,000 people in one room hanging out and interacting. It's kind of weird. And I was told that Austin is a weird place, right? Isn't their logo Keep Austin Weird? And so in that sense, I wanted to make sure everybody knew that of all the educators here, we're definitely the weirdest, all right? I'm going to take the title of weird because not just as a teaching in that classroom, a weird experience, but we have multiple other weird approaches using weird language. We got a textbook. I'm sorry that we developed a alter ego superhero slash anti-hero comic guy that is the host of the textbook, and the textbook's actually, I call it, or I'm getting back to oral tradition where I spoke the whole book and wrote it down and just give it to people. And yes, it's not that academic, and yes, it doesn't have great references, but oops, students accidentally read it. And the best compliments I've gotten are, damn it, I didn't even have to, and I read this whole book. I couldn't stop reading this book. And we're like, it's awesome. So the printed word is not dead, but we just need to make it less academic and more real. And that's, again, I know it's not a great book, but I'm striving to do something different. In that format, we also are doing a graphics approach and doing educational comic books. Am I that big of a comic book dude? No. I'm just looking for different ways to tell stories and get people educated about stuff. And some people who may think comic books are a joke, that's fine. I'm not that much into them. However, there are folks who would never read about Vladimir Putin's Russia or never read about a pro-democracy movement in Burma. However, if I wrote a comic book about it, they might say, hey, that's kind of cool, and read it, and oops, they accidentally learned. Gotcha again with a graphic novel approach. We also, of course, do tons of stuff online with blogging and live streaming, and we're going to get to some of those things. And we put it all on a one big weird site, and it's all free and open access. I'm a total goober in that I haven't monetized anything. I'm just an idiot who likes people to be smarter. So I put all this content out and push it out to the world, and everybody can have it and do any damn thing you want to with it. I don't care. You can copyright it and then sue me and say you own it. I don't care. It's yours. Take it and run with it. So we got this weird site that's all there, and we got stuff up front for you and cards and stuff, so you don't have to write anything down right now. We also have a weird grading system. Now, I'm a pretty wide open speaker, and I've got enough slides to last another 16 hours, so we can wait for questions till the end, if the end ever comes, but you can also ask questions along the way. I should have said that before I even started ranting, because different folks, depending on your background, might have questions about different things, and the last time I gave this talk, we ended up talking an hour just about this slide, so I was just going to go over the slide quickly, but if you have questions, go for it. And the weird grading system I'm referring to is, with this many people, we want to give as many options to students to learn and pretty much make their own assessments for their grade, the best ways they see fit to hone their skills. And so we don't have a standard grading system where you're like, oh, you got to take this midterm and you got to turn this paper in. We say, hell no, do what you want to do. Here are way more options than you could possibly ever use. In a semester, you can Twitter for a grade, you can do blogs for the grade, you can do the conventional midterm and final exams if you want to. We are actually trying to discourage people from doing it. You can do this cool thing called flash quizzes, which students love. We don't know why they love it. We just invented it last semester, where I said, hey, I'm going to go talk about this democracy movement in the Democratic Republic of Congo. I'm going to put it up on a blog. It's a 20-minute rant with some maps. I just posted it, and at midnight tonight, I'm going to have a quiz if anybody's interested. The quiz will last 5 minutes. It's a five-minute window. Go take it if you want to. And students are like, that's awesome. Can we have more of those? And I'm like, really? Okay. So if you gave a pop quiz in class, people would think it's the suckiest thing ever. You put it online, they can access it in Guatemala if they want on spring break, and actually I'm doing them during spring break right now because students requested them. You put it online, you have this gaming aspect to it, they can take it from anywhere they want, anytime they want, and they think it's awesome, and they want more of it. So, yes.
Do the students advise you which ones they're choosing, like up
Her question was, how do they have like a contract up front where they sign up for things at the beginning of the semester? No, but actually we're going to implement that next semester because we did lose some freshmen. Some freshmen came up against this and they're like, this is a really cool class. I can't do it. I failed. No one's telling me what to do. And again, it's a mindset. It's an American educational mindset that the hand-holding. And so, and I'm not blaming anybody in the room. We're all part of the system. That needs to be broken and rebuilt. But what we do is say, you tell us. If you want to sign up for the Twitter thing, you got to tell us so we set up the account for you. You're going to do this, you got to tell us so that your TAs can grade it for you. But we are going to kind of build a contract system up front from now on and say, because here's the end result of this. By the end of the semester, you have point. You get points, different point allotment for different things. If you want an A, you got to earn 1,050 points. We don't care how you do it. You just got to do it. It's awesome, by the way, because there's really no excuses at the end of the semester, is there? People say, can I get extra credit? I'm like, yeah, you've had extra credit for 3 months. Right there it is. But I failed the exam. Great. Go do something else. I couldn't make it. My grandma died. Fine. All right. Put a rose on her grave and go do something else. I mean, it really gets rid of so many problems. And again, it's putting the impetus on the student. You got to do it. It's almost like work. It's a job. Go do it. Yes, in the back.
In the same way, do you put what kind of deadlines you've got on these things? Because students, say, go 3 weeks into the term, do very little and say, right, now I'm
going to start
to the minimum to get.
Yeah, you do have to be aware that we stress this throughout the semester. And this is all in our syllabus, by the way, all of which is accessible. We're going to put it on the website. The syllabus is 25 pages because it explains all of these things in great detail. To answer your question is, yes, students understand you can't wait till the end. I mean, there are weekly quizzes that are only active for a week. The flash quizzes are only active, you know, maybe twice a week. The Twitter assignment is you have to Twitter two or three times a week all semester. Or, I'm sorry, two or three times a day all semester. So, yes, everything is structured so that it's you're in it from the start.
We know they're going to try to game it, so we have rules. It's like, no, your max is 5 a week. We have a maximum to earn the max, so it's not like, at the end, I'm going to do 50 million posts and earn all my points in 1 week. It doesn't work.
Like, nope. Oh, no, it's a mix of both. I mean, the midterm, the final, weekly quizzes, flash quizzes, all that stuff's automated, so online quizzing. Okay, that's multiple choice and some other things. But, yeah, that's all structured that way. The Twitter assignments, blog assignments, they are officially graded. Oh, I should tell you.
You have three TAs.
We have three TAs who help with this, all right? So, but that's why I think this is a good talk, I hope, for an instructor even in a class of 30. I mean, these are tools that we're saying, hey, we're pulling this shit off with 3,000. You can use this stuff for 30 just as effectively, if not more effectively, because you can spend more time doing really perhaps a better assessment than we could do for 3,000. But if you just think about just the Twitter, we're like, people are like, you're using Twitter? Oh, my God, how are you making? No one's going to learn from Twitter. I'm getting a little ahead of myself here, but we tell you about the Twitter assignment. The Twitter assignment is they have to pose as a major world leader for the whole semester in what we call the Plaid Avengers shadow cabinet. And so there's a Plaid Barack Obama and a Plaid David Cameron as the Prime Minister of the UK and a Plaid Julia Gillard, Prime Minister of Australia. And you are them for the semester, and you have to say, I'm in Canberra working on domestic policy today as Julia Gillard, and I just had a fight with this person, and I just met with that other person. And so they have to interact with each other, but they have to, 140 characters at a time, three or four times a day, say what this person is doing on planet Earth. And that may seem trivial, but you think about it, by the end of the semester, they've essentially written a 20-page term paper, one sentence at a time. So we find it wildly effective, and the students, not all of them, some people, again, just do it because they're getting a grade, but the people who get engaged with this project, they go nuts and interact with each other, and we've actually found that they are interacting with real people in the real world, and actually some of our Plaid leaders have more followers than the real presidents and prime ministers they're portraying, so it's an interesting thing that's happening. Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah, we get feedback. You should know that we We only do 150 Twitter leaders.
Yeah, there's only so many world leaders out there. So we have, we have 150 accounts that I manage myself. I've created them. I have the passwords, and I grade just twice a semester at midterm and the final. Mm-hmm. The best thing about Twitter is it archives it all. I just scroll down, and it's all right there, and has the date one at a time, and I can just look at their content. And it's actually pretty easy to grade. You just scroll. I see the dates, and I see if the good ones, they've got it done. So.
Yeah, as a general rule for everything we're going to show you, which we're already running out of time for, all the stuff we're going to show you is all self-archived, even the office online video that we use. Every single thing we do all semester is captured and stored somewhere, and mostly free. I don't like paying for stuff, and I don't like students paying for stuff. Yeah. Yeah, that's what we're evolving out to, digital portfolio, because I'm also passionate about how was I phrasing it, Katie? The transparency grading,
educational transparency.
I think the concept of and all of us in this room, or many of us, did this. The concept of writing a 150 page thesis that you give to three old white dudes in a room, they glance over it and throw it in the garbage, is the most bizarre thing ever. And I take that down to sorry to all the old white dudes in the room who are reading thesis right now, but you could scale this down to the individual student. Why is everything they do looked at and thrown away? Now, K through 12, reading, writing, arithmetic, maybe you don't need to save that stuff. But when you start to get to critical thinking stuff where you're creating and they're writing, I mean, I think back of, I probably would be embarrassed to see something I wrote in 10th grade, but boy, it would have been a really good learning tool for me now as a 40-year-old to go back and look what I was writing about at 15, and of course, I don't have any of that stuff. So I think it's a very potential awesome thing for future students to be able to gauge their own increases in learning over the span of their lifetime. Yeah. Well, I'd like to think, actually, our school, even though it's a big school, Virginia Tech's in Southwest Virginia, if you don't know where it's at, everybody's heard of Virginia Tech because of horrible things that always happen at Virginia Tech, but it's actually a fairly conservative school. Why I'm still hired there, I don't know, all right, but it's fairly conservative, and actually the level of interconnectivity is much lower than you would think, so we're actually introducing a lot of people to Twitter and stuff, believe it or not. And we think, actually, I don't know if anybody wants to comment about this in the room, but I've been doing this for about 15 years, and I see a digital divide right now, not the educational digital divide, but we have seniors, most of them don't Twitter. Freshmen, all of them Twitter. So, I mean, we're on the brink right now of this turn that more and more people are growing up with these interconnections and social media stuff. To answer your question, no, I don't speak to a lot of employers. However, we do have a lot of alumni who took my class who do work for educational technology places, one on the West Coast. And I don't speak with employers directly, but I can tell you just from a content standpoint that students are like, I totally got this job because I knew what the hell was going on in Russia. And I had the sense enough to do this, and I could speak, critically and logically about world events. And so I think I'm giving students real world knowledge that's really practical. Whether the social networking stuff's practical, I don't know. We're mostly using these tools to tap into what they're doing already, not so much to teach them about it. Does that make sense? Yeah.
What fraction of the stuff that they submit electronically actually gets assessed by human beings as opposed to just being machine graded by quizzes?
You want to speak on that?
Yeah, not event class papers. It's like a 3-page paper that we send them to an outward. We don't send them, but we list events that are happening at Virginia Tech that might have an international flair to them. And we highly encourage they go to these events and write a paper. So that's hand graded. The Twitter assignment's graded. Forum commented is hand graded. Geographic film review, another paper that's graded.
In my other class, I teach a class on wine as well, and that only has 600 people in it, so it's small. All right, so we're pushing them to do online blogs about wine experiences, tasting food and wine pairings, and I give them double points if they do it with their parents. which works. They're like, yeah, so I'm getting my parents to drink wine. I'm like, yeah, this is a beautiful thing. And then they have to document it all, photo document it. It's basically like photojournalism on their experiences.
Just one follow-up. How many hours have you got these teaching assistants working?
Just like anything else, once you know an A paper pretty quick. I mean, do you really have to read through? If you assign a 10-page paper, you can read the first few paragraphs and know if somebody knows their stuff and if somebody's BSing. So, yeah, it's an accelerated thing, but, yes, it's all graded. Yeah,
About 20. The TAs for their assistantship is 20 hours a week. Usually ours say they don't spend that much time.
Yeah.
The grading is not as intense as it would seem because a lot of people choose not – if people choose, like a lot of people do not choose to write. They would choose never,
yes.
ever to
yes.
write. So actually, yeah. we don't get that many papers compared to the whole class.
Yeah, if they can click their way through, the majority will still click. We shouldn't make any miscontent about that. Yeah. Yeah, we give those options too. Yeah, in fact, we encourage creativity. We're like, sure, do anything you want to do, and they have to clear it with us first. But we're pretty flexible in terms of, yeah, do what. If you can demonstrate world international knowledge to me by creating a rap song and doing it on stage, yeah, go for it. Let's do that. That's hilarious. More art. We've had a lot of people do art. Yeah. Let's get to office hours, actually, because we've only got the slide 3 of 100, which, by the way, is exactly how I teach class every Monday night as well. We're going to go through using some of the technologies that that help us do all this, communications, community building, and social networking, and then we'll get to future endeavors, I doubt. But I'll just go ahead and start up with the first one, Katie.
What am I going to?
That's fine, yeah. Go ahead and click through it. We want to use technologies to connect one professor with 3,000 students, which is what Katie usually says her job is, and she's the one who's gone out and found all these things. I'm not going to lie. I'm an old-school white dude myself who, if I had not met her, would probably be doing the things the same old way I was doing them 10 years ago. But she's introduced all these technologies that have helped communications, again, between me and them, but also each other. So this goes up before class.
Yeah, we have the dual projectors. This is one of the slides that's always up when they get there in class. So they know every day, here's how you can connect. Join our turntable room, play some music, here's how you get there.
Yeah, the little cartoony thing you saw before we started was turntable, and the sound didn't work, but it's just basically Facebook for music, and so students can jump into this room and play music. And you might think, well, what the hell's that got to do with the world regions? Well, we actually created a room called the International Spin where they have to play music not from America or Europe, thus introducing each other to cool new tunes from China and South Africa and other stuff like that. And it's mostly about community building. We're trying to get people engaged. Is that just a cool factor? A little bit. People are like, yeah, that's kind of cool. But Katie will tell you, and maybe if there's any folks who just got out of college or are still in college will tell you, when you walk into the first day of class and there's a Twitter feed live going and music is going, we haven't done anything. I haven't taught anything at all yet. But people are excited because there's something actively going on. And it's awesome for me because I don't do any of it. It just goes up on the screen and they interact with each other and it makes it look like I do a job. Yeah.
Do you work to make like small group happenings too? Because I think
yes.
That will alleviate the office hour thing too. But like where they're actually, for the ones engaged and connected, they're making smaller and stronger groups. And
yeah, I want to continue to stress, not everybody in this class of 3,000 is engaged. We're going to say all these cool things to show this cool software, but you know, there's people who are like, I don't care, I'm here for grade. Get me through. But what we found, getting back to this idea of a group synergy that we actually could not predict happen, is that groups started happening on their own. It wasn't a goal, but with like the music thing. Some people really like music. Some people are really into music. I'm actually not, but some people really are into music. And those people find each other using that tool in class. And then, lo and behold, they get to be friends, especially because we teach a lot of freshmen. So it's a nice icebreaker, and they meet people, and they, oh, you like that music? I like this. Oh, I love Russian music. And then they end up being study partners. So what's that got to do with me? Nothing. And that's what I like about it, that people are helping people. right?
And the cool thing is, like, I get there an hour before class starts, and I have people waiting for turntable. They're like, oh, yeah, we're all here. Like, we're ready. Put it up. Like, we're ready to hear. Like, we're ready to play. Like,
want to see my icon
here
up
early.
There.
Like, yeah. Ready to play some music. It's like, okay.
So we have the hat class hashtag. I think everybody knows enough technology, I hope, in the room that knows what this stuff is. So we use Facebook and Twittering for communications. And, again, I have a Facebook page that is a public page. I know a lot of people worried about privacy, especially if you're from smaller towns or teach small classes. And you're like, oh, I don't want my students seeing pictures of my grandbaby. That's fine. I don't want them seeing it either. So I like have my page, which is just for fun. I also have a Platt Avenger page. And these are basically, I call them work pages. Pretty much in this day and age, everybody should have at least 10 different identities online anyway. So I use them as a forum for people to interact. And so I'll say, oh, yeah, we just had the midterm exam, and it all worked, and I got 100 on it. I always get 100 on every exam I ever write. How did you guys do? And you see 38 people liked it, and 29 people commented, and honestly, I didn't read any of them. It's not for me. Sometimes I'll go in and interact, but it's mostly for the students to interact with each other, and they think it's cool and good for them. All right, so the usual, that we have the class hashtag, and the class hashtag is cool. Go ahead and click it again. Because what we also saw was people answering each other's questions. So we don't have to. So someone gets on with the hashtag and says, hey, what's the movie for this week? And somebody responds, dude, that's tomorrow, and it's this movie. Look at the syllabus, you idiot. So, again, it takes us out of the equation and helps students help each other. Poll Everywhere, you've now seen that we did it before class or before this lecture, and we do it before class, and sometimes we do it during class. So we might say, hey, what do you guys want to talk about today? Or, hey, what part of the a Russian lecture did you not understand that you'd like to see, hear some more detail about, or I do Q&A about? And it's great because, again, you don't have to participate. So there'll be people who say, because it's gamed out, as you saw. So there'll be people like, yeah, Siri is fine with me, so I'm not going to vote. Boy, but if Nigeria starts winning, I don't want to hear about Nigeria, so I'll now vote for Syria. So, again, it's like active online. You guys can do what you want to do, and we'll go forward from there. We also do Ustream, and this perhaps is the greatest innovation that we've done, especially with a class of this size, but it totally scales down to a smaller class, and that is online office hours. Somebody asked about it earlier. I don't know how many of you work at the university level, but does anybody come to your office hours? It's almost comical to even discuss the idea that someone's going to traipse across campus in the rain or the wind to sit outside your door while you show up and fumble around with your keys and spill your coffee and get in. Nobody does that. I've been doing this for 15 years, and I think in the last decade, maybe 5 people showed up for official office hours in my office. Then we put it online because we're like, well, holy crap, we might get a bunch of people show up with 3,000. Let's put it online. Let's use the mediums that these students use. And Ustream is a totally live service, although now they're interjecting commercials into it, so that sucks a little bit. But it's free, and it archives. So I get online, and that's my office. Isn't it awesome? Totally pimp, all right? And I accept questions through Google Chat, but also AIM. And so I say, here's my address, Geog 1014. You got a question anywhere on planet Earth. Anywhere on planet Earth. It's live, open to the world. You can send me a question, and I'll answer it via video chat. There's also a chat room that happens that's underneath this, but I'm old, so I can't read that damn fast. And, you know, people get in there, their responses go too fast, so I say, you can go talk in the chat room, but if you want me to answer a question, send it to me, and for those of you who used AIM, the little window pops up on your screen. Right there it is. You can see it.
So I'm in the chat room monitoring those questions, too. If there's anything they're like, I just wanted to know, like, when's the movie? I'll answer those little questions. Mostly the questions they ask him is, what is going on in Palestine?
Yeah. So. We do mostly current events assessment and, again, trying to keep an engaged audience and a conversation flowing in the classroom but also outside the classroom. When we do the class of 3,000, which is every fall, we typically have anywhere from 100 to 300 people show up for online office hours. You're like, what? That's more students than I would have had for the next 40 years in a conventional office hour setting. Yeah. At one time, yeah. Well, the beauty of it is also that, again, you can be anywhere on planet Earth to do it, so people, even after they graduate or not my class anymore, they still tap into the online office hours to continue the conversation. Again, we get very excited about that because we're like, yes, those are lifelong learners. They just want to keep the conversation going. Isn't that what we're in this business for? So sometimes we have people's parents jump in there with us too. Again, another open access thing that may sound dicey to some, but I think it's great. I'm like, sure, tell your parents to come in. I'll talk to them. Hell, they paid for your education. They're the ones writing the check. I'll talk to them. They can come into class if they want to as well. So this has been a phenomenal success. And by the way, all of it's archived, so you can go back and look at my office hours from 2 years ago. They just do it for free. Again, they are now interjecting commercials every 5 minutes, so that's problematic, which is why we're perhaps going to try Spreecast, which is the next new hot thing. And it's a little bit cooler. I'll let Katie tell you why it's cooler.
Well, so this usual ad space is at the bottom of the video. Actually, you can put links there. So Gary threw in a link of Twitter status you wanted to show. And also you can you log in through Facebook. But the really cool thing is on when you're on the if you're giving the feed, someone can click like, yeah, my video, my camera's active. So you can click on a student who wants to ask a question. So you can have up to four people in the box, all of them chatting at once with live video. So it's kind of cool. We're thinking about testing it so you don't have to instant message in your question anymore. You just click on the person and you see them in their dorm going, yes, my question's about this. And then
yeah,
everybody can see it.
And then I could cut and paste links in there. And then if it's, I think it's tied through Facebook so you can actually see everybody's icon. So we're going to experiment around with that. It should be pretty cool. Okay. And video podcasts, we're just going to skip over the video podcast. They are. It's nice to do video content. It is the future, of course. But as a base, as something that they can reference, that they can look at, I will never accept that creating a bunch of videos will substitute for teaching. That's not teaching. A bunch of videos streamed out to millions, that's TV. And I like TV too, all right? But we can't lose the interaction. You cannot lose the communication. So I put a lot of stuff up there for people to look at and reference later. But it's just another tool in the toolbox. It's not going to replace me or anybody else. I'm sorry, did I see a hand? Yes, I'm sorry.
I have a question in regards to how this university itself perceives what you're doing.
They're pretty clueless, as most universities are.
So you've used a lot of free platforms. So you've actually lowered cost of delivery.
Yeah.
You're increasing revenue per hour by having 3,000 people in the room.
Yeah, well, yeah, they love me. Yeah.
Do they realize what's going on?
No. They're pretty clueless, yeah. Again, it's kind of a conservative university, and, you know, let me take that back. Virginia Tech is awesome, all right? Yes, home of the Fighting Hokies. We're inventing the future. We're light years ahead of all your universities. Not really, all right? Again, this stuff is so new. You know how bureaucracies work, and I'm not going to make fun of Virginia Tech. I'm making fun of every university and school system everybody in this room works for. They're going to have a panel, and they're going to have to write a paper, and they're going to have to talk about it, and that's fine. You need that kind of oversight. But we truly consider ourselves the canary in the coal mine. We're out there pushing it. We're pushing the edge. We're seeing what works and what doesn't work, and when it fails, we find out real quick with 3,000 people, and we don't use it anymore. And then we try something else. So, yeah, we actually try to stay under the radar as much as you can with 3,000 people. The university is like, yeah, well, what we're getting to next is community building. And we're almost out of time, but community building is actually way more important than everything I've talked about so far, that you have freshmen come in and feel like they're engaged and connected with a class that makes them part of a university, part of a bigger whole. And that's one of the other things that I think the true power of a lot of these social networking stuff is that community building. Yes, information dissemination is awesome and communications are great, but don't overlook the community building. And the university does understand that because they keep getting letters every semester saying, I walked into my first college class and it was in an auditorium full of 3,000 people and I wanted to quit college. And my parents are like, what the hell am I paying for 3,000 people? And I'm like, yeah, that's a total natural reaction. This is the best class I ever took, and I feel like I'm part of a community now, and thank you, and this is a great class. So we do get those. I know that's not very scientific, but there have been people who have done research in our class and polled people on different aspects, and it seems like it's working. Yeah. Yeah, I try to be pretty flexible with the office hours, and actually I'm going to more night office hours because, again, that's the college student schedule. I'm a night owl myself, so it's not that big a deal. But, yeah, I used to do the standard, oh, we'll do it at noon on Wednesdays. Nobody showed up. And even online, you'd only have like 50 to 100 people show up. Push it off to the evening and maybe expand the hours, and you have more people that participate. Again, it's just – here's the deal. The online office hours, they're just office hours. There's no credit involved. There's – You don't. There's no benefit whatsoever except you get smarter to come hang out and continue the conversation. Yeah. Size of the room. Yeah. That's what we're going to find out, but we don't have a big enough room. So what we're going to do is start to hybridize the model a little bit and say, okay, everybody loves seeing me live, all right? Maybe you're sick of me live at this point after 40 minutes, but students really seem to like the live lecture, and I love lecturing. I mean, it's part of what we do, and I think it's an important part of education. But there's so much content. There's so much content already out there, and I've created so much content for videos already, but we're going to finish creating my whole lecture series video and have it online, and what we have is already online for free at PlatteAdventure.com. It's all there. So we're going to do more of that and then say, okay, here's the deal. We'll take the class to 5 or 10,000, and you'll watch these 10 hours of video of me being insane. And then when we get together in a hybrid model of 3,000 people live, 3,000 people or 7,000 people online, then we'll do the current events discussion and back and forth. Oh, I'm sure there is a size limit. And it'll be limited by resources. And to the end of the experiment, I have no aspirations that I'm going to teach a million people this way. None. I don't want to teach a million people this way. I don't want to teach a million people, I don't think, unless I get paid by the person. All right, so the logical end game is, how many people can you truly interact with and it still be a meaningful experience to them? And there certainly is an end to that. There certainly is. Not to diss all of the great work that's being done by like Udacity and what's the new Khan Academy. Oh, yeah, it's like that. Well, that's great. Have 10 trillion people watch it. But they ain't part of no community. We like to think that we are holding the line on that because people still get very excited about the content, very excited about the class, make friends. They become lifelong learners, and that's what I'm doing. Yeah.
Has it put pressure on your colleagues? Because these students experience this in a 100-level class. They go to 200.
Yeah, my colleagues. I'm not sure I have any colleagues anymore. No, there's really lots of great people at Virginia Tech, but there are those that hate me and think I'm the devil, and they're saying, this class must suck, it's stupid. As, you know, people who have many degrees are often want to do, go ahead and judge the book by the cover. Having never come to the class, I have no idea. Like, oh, everybody gets A's in that class, just an easy A class, stupid. And now my department head wants us to teach 3,000 people. I hate that boy or guy. It's like, yeah, that's me. Hi, nice to meet you. We never got into doing this for any ulterior motive at all. I mean, I get paid nothing. So there's no motive for me to do this besides I'm just passionate about people being smarter. And the whole reason this came about actually was because, for those of you that know the higher ed model with registering for classes, you'll say, oh, there's 550 seats in this classroom, and 550 seats are filled, and here's the overflow that 700 people tried to sign up for the class and didn't get in. And it got to a point about 5 years ago that it was 550 capacity, 550 seats full, 4,595 people tried to get in. And I'm like, what the hell is that? This is terrible. And you have people coming to you going, Professor Boyer, I'm getting ready to graduate, and I got to have your class, and tears, and my grandmother's dying. It's always back to the grandmothers, all right? And like, I have to be the bad guy. It's like, nope, can't get into my class. I'm just too cool. And I got to a point, I said, let's wipe out all demand at one time. Let's do this experiment with 3,000. It will fail miserably, I'm sure. But we'll do it, and we'll wipe out all demand, and that'll be that. And unfortunately, it worked. So the demand was still there. Yeah.
I think I'm in a different scenario. I work for a corporation where I'm teaching employees. So a lot of the things we need to teach on, I can't put in public places because it's considered proprietary and all that.
Understood.
Yeah. So have you found any technologies or tools or anything that can be closed down?
Are you kidding? All of the systems are closed, which is why I don't like any of them. Yeah. Go after you leave this room, everything else. That's all closed systems.
I need to find something that is fun and interactive, yet it's still closed so my lawyers don't freak out all the time. I can't seem to find...
Exactly. Isn't that funny in life, that things that are fun and interactive can't be closed? That's kind of wow. I think that was like some sort of deep ideological metaphor I just said. We can talk after, but I actually try not to mess with systems that are closed. I just don't like them. Yeah.
Have you thought of doing more experimenting with gaming?
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. When we get a little more time, we want to start doing more gaming, and maybe it's badges. People are keen on badges. I don't even know what the hell that is. I know about honey badgers, but I don't know. I'm not a badges person, but all my people like her and other smart people like, oh, yeah, students like this, so we're going to build some sort of you become a Platt Avenger correspondent if you can pass these tests and understand this much about the world. It's kind of, for those of you about my age, we're kind of starting to build a Carmen Sandiego model accidentally. It was not intentional, but that's probably where it's going. It's probably where it's going. Yeah?
In terms of assignments, what has been your
biggest failure? Biggest failure? Like why would you suggest I failed?
You try something and it doesn't.
We used, when we first did this commenting, we had them comment on the New York, it was the New York Times at first?
We did The Economist.
The Economist, and there's another one. And we contacted these people, like, we need to be able to grade it easily and, like, find the comments. They're like, yes, of course, yes, we want your numbers. We want to sell them $10.
Yeah, we want to sell 3,000 newspapers.
Oh, it was, like, the most nightmare grading system ever. It was so, like, 50 clicks to get to their comment, and it was like, this is horrible. And they're like, yes, you're going to do it again. And we're like, no, not unless you build us a system. And they're like, oh, we can build it. And then they went higher up, and they're like, no, we're not going to build your system. We don't want to work that hard for you.
And well, then I think the semester after that, we adopted The Economist. We think, oh, The Economist. Hey, British, all right? And they actually were editing our student comments.
They were deleting them.
They were deleting them. Anything, and I hate to say this because The Economist is a reputable news source, but we kept getting comments about Palestine deleted. And I'm like, all right, I'm not playing that game. All right? And they kept assuring me, no, it's not about content. And I'm like, okay, anytime anybody says anything that was like an anti, even a hint of an anti-Israeli sentiment, it would get deleted, and it's like, that's not going to work. So we did have some problems with that. Yeah?
How do you manage with the Plaid, leaders of the world Twitter accounts? Do you just recycle those each semester?
Yeah, the account stays the same. There'll be a Plaid Barack Obama until he's out of office, and it rolls semester to semester.
Yep. And some semesters are so passionate. They're like, can I keep Twittering?
Yeah.
Like, you want to do it after class? Yeah, I really love my world leader. We're like, okay. Yeah.
So we do have people who are permanent. The person that was doing Muammar Gaddafi kept doing it right up till he died. All right? And she graduated 3 years ago. And then she was still so passionate, we made it into a Plaid Avenger zombie Gaddafi. So we're keeping the world leaders alive past their deaths. Because it's kind of fun reporting as Muammar Gaddafi from hell. I apparently the students like it. Yeah.
You spoke of an emergence that occurs as the class grows. Is there like a certain threshold where this new sort of behavior?
Well, I can only tell you about our experience. And so I taught a class of 575 for the last decade. And we had good interactivity there. But we just didn't even think about using a lot of these tools until we made the jump to 3,000. And again, that was mostly out of necessity. We're like, what can we do? We don't want to do the same old, trying to give an exam to 3,000 people simultaneously. It's such a nightmare. I mean, we even have a huge thing called the Math Emporium that has like, it's like an old gutted Walmart that has like 1,000 computers in it. And even with that, it became a day-long affair to try to cycle in 3,000 people under controlled conditions to take the exam. I'm like, oh. So a lot of the stuff became born out of necessity, as so many things are. It's like, well, let's try this. Let's build this assignment that we could do in a digital world so we wouldn't have to do anything else in the real world with it. I know everybody's got more questions. Would you like to see a few more slides? All right. Let me at least in the last minutes get through some of the community building and social networking stuff. This is the cool stuff. We didn't even get to the cool stuff yet. Go ahead. We'll start clicking through these fast. Content-driven exercises that basically force people to interact with each other. That sounds bizarre, but it almost should be required at K-12 at this point. People are losing the ability to communicate with each other. And I don't want to say this, but properly. And by that I mean, people's online identities now are, I'll drop the F-bomb, I'll cuss, I'll do anything I want, I'll put up naked pictures of my sister. And it's like, we need to earlier on start to say, hey, I accept this as a way of communication, but here are the rules. Let's learn how to talk again. Let's learn how to interact in a proper context in public. And so a lot of these things are doing that, putting people out there and saying, no, you're going to interact with each other, you're going to interact with the world, but it's almost like we're teaching writing skills just to make them do it properly. So our Plaid forums, we created our own forums after our Economist and Wall Street Journal disasters. Yeah, and so because it's world regions, all things broken up by region. Most people do this assignment. You go ahead and click on it, Katie. You go into a region. You have to twice a week post a unique news story that no one else has posted, give a summary of it, and then three times a week you have to comment on somebody else's story. Ah, forced interaction. And again, I say forced, but it's the dialectic. That's what we're here for. You got to have the back and forth and show that you're reading other people's stuff and can communicate with them. The Twitter assignment, perhaps we've talked about ad nauseum now, but we'll say a few other things. Part of the assignment is also interaction with this, too. If Vladimir Putin of Russia interacts with Timoshenko of Ukraine in real life, they have to interact with each other online in our world as well. And they have to say, I like you, I don't like you, I admit that was a good meeting we had about the gas pipeline deal. So, again, forcing not the real world, but also forcing interaction with each other. And it's hilarious because a lot of these leaders have more followers than the real world leaders. In fact, the current president of Russia, Dmitry Medvedev, actually went and visited Silicon Valley about a year ago and signed some deals with Silicon Valley. And he visited Twitter and Facebook and a couple other places, and it was reported in the news. Dmitry Medvedev of Russia visits Twitter and set up Twitter account. And that was awesome. Unfortunately for Dmitry, he chose as his username Russ13795. And we already had Plaid Dmitry Medvedev online, so we gained 8,000 followers that day as soon as the news story broke. And we also have people, this is true, I don't know why, but a lot of Latin American leaders, their people feel like they're really in touch with them. So the president of Argentina on a daily basis gets a request, could you please come fix pothole in front of house? And we're like, no, this is a fake account. We're not actually in Argentina. And I don't know if anybody does Twitter stuff, but at the beginning of the year, actually right in January 2nd, I believe, did anybody hear the news that Rupert Murdoch started a Twitter account? Does anybody hear that? And that the day he started a Twitter account, he had like 4 million followers, and he was only following four other people, and one of them was us.
our plaid Larry Page, the Google CEO, he followed that account. We were like, oh, my God, he's
and we
following.
Were talking with him. Yeah, we were interacting with him
and
going, hey.
Yeah, he responded. I wrote for Page because it was during break, and I was like, good job signing up on Twitter. Is Google Plus next? And he replied, like, I'm not sure I should even be on Twitter right now. And so we got
and we're like, yeah, you shouldn't. You just got had. All right. And then, unfortunately, some British tabloid broke the story, and they're like, hey, this is some fake college credit account in Virginia, and then he unfollowed us. Damn it, all right? But that's the kind of fun you can have when you push people out in the real world. We're going to do more of that with actual news creation, too, and that brings us to our next assignment, which is Delicious. How much time we got? 5 minutes. Delicious and actually Reddit we're starting to build assignments for, and this is news curation, another great, great skill in terms of understanding real life and the digital world. That people have to go out and collect, say, 5 or 6 news stories on one topic, say the Russian election, and they have to do it from a variety of news sources. So a Russian news source, Chinese news source, a U.S. news source, a leftist news source, a rightist news source, and they have to make comments. They have to assess the article and put it all together. It's really Delicious. It's pretty new, and it's pretty cool, and Reddit is, too, in terms of clustering thing. News curation and understanding sources online is another critical skill. It's not what we're supposed to be doing, but we have to do it to get people to do this assignment right. And it's another, again, valuable skill that I think everybody should have. Click through. Student input, creating shared knowledge. This is the one I'm most excited about, even though we're out of time, which is I think everybody's an expert on something. I think everybody on the planet's an expert. I think students know a whole hell of a lot. And for instance, I'd rather talk to 10 Chinese teenagers on the streets of Beijing about what's going on there than I would any Chinese specialist in higher ed in America. You're going to get a different perspective and a real perspective and a valuable perspective. And so on that lines, I've now created something called the International Interview because we have a big campus with lots of international students. Go ahead, Katie. And I just do an audio interview with people and say, hey, just tell me about your hometown. What's going on there? What's the hot news? How do you like your president? They can talk about anything they want, food, health, dance, music, politics, and we are tagging them using Google Map so that we get them down and tagging them to their actual street address from where they're from on planet Earth. We would like to populate this with like 10 million interviews, and actually I'm hoping to build a network of teachers to help me do this. There will be a great assignment for students to interview other students and to post it on here as a real learning lesson. And then it's an archive of data that you can say, hey, I'm getting ready to visit Jodhpur outside of Rajasthan. I don't have any idea what it's like. Hey, here's this person from there, and click on it, listen to the interview. Again, it's just one concept we use for class, but if you start to think about whatever it is you teach, how could you build networks of people around the planet? My ultimate goal with that is to have people who are going to, say, do an assignment on an uprising in Tajikistan. I don't want you to even do news curation anymore. I want you to contact 10 people in Tajikistan and talk to them. That's what communications can do for us nowadays. This is vast volume of human knowledge that's out there, and we're basically using it to buy stuff on Amazon and porn. And it's like, get that stuff out of the way and let's start trading real information with each other. Turntable, again, is a music platform that we just put up before class for people to share music. And I know we're out of time, so the last exciting thing is networking to experts outside of the classroom, bringing them into the classroom. We'll just click. I don't know if you guys know this Gary Vaynerchuk guy, but we threw it. He was a wine guy. Now he's a marketing guru, billionaire. And we did a class call out to him online. The video went viral. He came to Virginia Tech and did a talk. He waived his $50,000 speaking fee and got so excited because of the energy in the room, because of our community, that he actually ended up giving away $50,000 worth of stuff to the students. He just kept giving away stuff. And we're like, yeah. He's like, can I give something? I'm like, dude, you can give away anything you want. I don't care. Give away the house and the car. And we did this again. I don't know if anybody saw this movie called The Way, Martin Sheen and Emilio Estevez. It was just released about 6 months ago, or actually just 4 months ago. And they, instead of doing a standard Hollywood marketing campaign, they got on a bus and just drove across the country and showed the film at small venues. We heard about them doing this. We calculated when they were going to be closest to our hometown. And then we did a video call out to them with 3,000 people. And we got them to come. And so Martin Sheen and Emilio Estevez came into class, showed their video. Great pictures, by the way, Kevin. Kevin's the one who took these pictures. And had not just a great time for the students, but actually it was the best stop for those guys to have that sort of, again, that community and that energy, that synergy, that interactive. Best picture of my entire life. Thanks for that, Kevin. New Facebook page. And it wasn't, again, just it was awesome for us, but Emilio Estevez tweeted about it and said, this was the most fantastic experience ever. I wish I'd have went to college. I wish I would have went to Virginia Tech. That you can't buy. You can't buy that kind of synergy. You can't buy that kind of press. You can't buy that kind of energy. You have to build it with community from the ground up, and social networking tools help a lot with that. In fact, that's perhaps their greatest benefit. Bringing Skype into the classroom, we haven't even mentioned another great thing. I'm sure they'll kick us out when we're out of time. But we did because things kept working, we did a video shout out to Aung San Suu Kyi. I don't know if you know who that is. Nobel Peace Prize winner, pro-democracy activist who spent 14 to the last 20 years of her life in jail in Burma. She's out now. She's actually running for office. And we said, hey, will you come talk to our class? And actually it was a student from the class who said, hey, I'm from Burma, and I didn't know anything about what was going on in Burma until we started talking about it in class, and now can we get Aung San Suu Kyi to come? And I'm like, sure. I have her invite Barack Obama while you're at it. That's impossible. She's on the other side of the planet, high-profile person, Nobel Peace Prize winner. But what the hell? We'll try. And it worked. And she came in, the most gracious person ever. It was all student-led. The students helped create the video. The students made the contacts. The students contacted people in D.C. The students made it go viral. I came in and introduced it and got the hell out of the way, and the students got to ask this person question, have access to one of the most awesome people on planet Earth right in the classroom. That's what's exciting about this technology. That's what it's all about. And I know we're out of time, so we'll wrap it up there, and we'll just kind of go through. We also had other guests and people come, some Ugandan charitable groups. Actually, go back one, Katie. I forgot. This has been in the news. Has anybody seen the big invisible children thing that's in the news right now? This video went viral. They created that video in part because we did a shout out to them, and they came to our class as well. And we helped them. I think that might even be in the video of the one they have that's gone viral online right now. So again, just to kind of end this, wrap this up, you can go click through them, Katie. It's all about creating community and synergy in the classroom. I think that's going to be the successful classes of the future, particularly at the college level. Students stay connected long after the class. All of these things we're doing get people not just involved but inspired. All right, go ahead. And that's kind of the takeaway here. It's all about getting people inspired. That's what teaching is for. Yes, it's about communicating a base of knowledge, but you can get any sort of knowledge online anymore. There's lots of things you can go see and interact with. The teacher's job is still crucial. It will always be crucial as a filter, as a moderator, as a guide to all that information that's out there, and to inspire. And I'm nowhere way over time, but teaching is the art of educational conversation is the way I look at it. And these tools allow for a two-way street or perhaps a multi-lane superhighway of information and communications that can't be lost. If we can't provide meaningful, inspiring experiences in the classroom, what's the point of going to college? It's already overpriced. So wildly overpriced. If you're not going to do something special, if you're just going to give people a dictionary, they can do that on their own. So we need to figure out better ways to make class engaging, inspiring, and real, and that's what we've tried to do. Thank you so much for coming out. We'll answer any questions.